Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now we return back to the program Dr. Robert Oscar Lopez. He is the author of a book called Wackos, Thugs, and Perverts, Clintonian Decadence in Academia. And this is actually part two of our discussion about this. Dr. Lopez, welcome back to the program, and I guess you do hold no punches back when it comes to that title.
Thank you very much for having me back on.
Sure.
And yes, I have gotten a lot of great questions about that title. I wanted to make it clear that now is a time to speak very frankly and directly and to give up any pretenses that this is a sophisticated conversation among people who all have good intentions.
Well, okay, let's kind of set the stage here. Last time we were talking, we really focused a lot on you and your own particular issues, you know, where you were essentially drummed out of a state school in California because of your having spoken out against, you know, some aspects of homosexuality. Okay. There is a political correctness that is strangling so much of the, you know, college campuses today. Is this endemic? Is it systemic? Is it virtually everywhere on the American college campus?
Yeah, I think it is everywhere. I think this is now, we're way past the tipping point, and the system can't really self-correct. I think it's driven largely not so much by ideology, but by corruption, that essentially there developed a relationship between the Democratic Party and the administrators and faculty on campuses, and it became a very unhealthy alliance because the Democrats who were in positions to allocate budget would funnel huge amounts of funding to these universities, and they did not expect the universities to rein back tuition costs. So there was a huge amount of money going into there that was largely dependent on the Democrats being very loyal to the universities and the faculty. In exchange, the universities and the faculty became more and more indebted to the Democrats, and so had to drive out faculty who were not Democrats and especially crush the ones who were critical of the Democrats. And that eventually then influenced the subject matter, it influenced the research, it influenced all of the politics of campus governance. So we're in this terrible situation where, in a sense, a racket has reached a tipping point where the Democrats and the faculty are kind of in over their head. I think both of those groups don't know what to do, but they realize there's a problem, and it's just very hard for them to envision any way of correcting it.
Well, okay, if you were, let's say, a parent and you had a child who was maybe 15, and normally if you know, Lord willing, if things could work out, you'd want to send your child to college if the child was so inclined and so forth, all things being equal. Nowadays, though, is it worth it? Is it worth all the expense? I mean, so much of it just seems to be just loaded down with political correctness, but not even learning much.
Right. I don't think it is worth it right now. I think we have to take stock of the moment that we're in. It's a historic moment where there's going to be a drastic change in the way things run in our society. And I think college, based on the model of a four-year bachelor's degree program where your child graduates from high school and goes and embarks on this intellectual adventure, that's basically gone. That's nostalgia. That doesn't exist anymore. I think that if you're a well-intended parent, you have two options. You can either look for a very good Christian school, and it has to be a real confessional school that really holds people to its code. So I teach at a place like that now, Southwestern Baptist in Fort Worth. Or the thing that a lot of parents can do is you can send your child to a two-year trade program so they learn some kind of career skill, and then wait and see what happens with the colleges. They have to go through a massive series of reforms, and it's going to be really painful to a certain degree because the whole structure of those four-year programs is going to have to be reinvented. And I think a lot of government policy towards them is going to have to be drastically changed. So in the meantime, the most important thing is to get your child a skill to avoid getting into debt. That's the biggest thing, because I don't think there's really ever going to be some magic Santa Claus moment where they forgive all that student debt. And right now, the four-year programs, besides really not teaching people anything and making students somewhat dysfunctional with a lot of the social programming that they have on those campuses, on top of it, it's also extremely expensive.
And is there the free flowing of ideas?
No, colleges right now, there's none of that. I think what conservatives are responding to in the last, I would say, 3 years is a lot of high-profile headlines about speakers being disinvited or clubs having some huge controversy where, let's say, a conservative student club is not allowed to organize an event on campus. And those are real serious causes for concern, but that's the tip of the iceberg. The iceberg itself is all of the tenure-track faculty, the adjuncts, the administrators, the people who really oversee the education of the students from day to day. And those ranks have been purged entirely of conservatives. And so the conservatives that are in the academy are so incredibly rare. And the ones that exist there are people who, to a certain degree, either they're very quiet about who they are and they keep their head down because they don't want to have conflict, or the other thing that happens is that they have a vested interest in keeping the system the way it is because they are sort of like the one conservative expert who's called into Fox News, and they can constantly complain about liberal bias. But if you ask them about cutting off funding to these schools or taking away their accreditation, they will say no, because they don't actually want a lot of these conservative superstars. They don't actually want the system to change because they kind of benefit from being the lone dissenter.
Mm. Well, you know, you were mentioning, you know, a student or a speaker rather being disinvited. I mean, there was a situation just recently where there was a professor that was actually injured. The one who sponsored
college.
Yeah, pardon me? Yeah, explain that real briefly.
Well, I mean, this is common. This is what's been going on a lot is because conservative people, students, parents, and even people in the community don't have any outlet in the classroom, and they don't have any venue through scholarly publications, and they can't get on the agenda at department or college meetings. The only thing they have left is to bring in speakers. And so eventually what ends up happening is they invite a speaker to come to campus to offer an alternative viewpoint. And so you're bringing someone who has, in many cases, a fairly reasonable right-wing different opinion. But in the context of that bubble, this speaker comes across as just completely unacceptable, as some fringe extremist in the eyes of the people on campus. And that's what happened. There was a group that invited Charles Murray, who wrote The Bell Curve. Certainly, I don't agree with everything that Charles Murray writes about race and intelligence. But on the other hand, you know, I don't think that his observations or his theories are completely beyond the pale of civilization. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
But he came, and the goal of the students was not merely to refute him. I mean, they can't really refute him because they've never heard views like this. They have had no preparation to be able to argue with him. So they resort to these acts of violence. And I suspect that in all likelihood that their protest was probably coached and organized by somebody either on or off campus, administrators or local activists. And so they came, they were very, very aggressive, and they basically prevented him from speaking. And as they were trying to get Charles Murray safely out of the campus, they started to attack the organizers and the speaker, and so they pulled on the hair of one of the professors who was there, and she had a neck injury and had a concussion. She was hospitalized, and took her a while to recover from it. I mean, this is really severe stuff. This is what I mean, that we're way past the tipping point. I mean, we're at the point where colleges are, they're, I would say, lawless. I mean, they're kind of savage places, and there's no way that they're going to correct, I think, unless we cut off their funding. Because ultimately, even if you were to get a resolution to say, okay, people can bring in whatever speaker they want, that's still not addressing the much deeper problem, which is the fact that how could a community get to the point where they are so enclosed within one political viewpoint that they can't even process, they don't even know how to interpret someone who comes with a different point of view.
Yep, excellent point. You know, I once was talking with Robert Rector of the Heritage Foundation. I asked him off the air, how did you become a conservative? And he said, well, you know, I was growing up and, you know, only heard the liberal side of things. But then one time at college campus, there was a debate between Phyllis Schlafly and, you know, some liberal. And I heard Phyllis Schlafly articulate her perspective, and I thought, oh, that makes a lot more sense, actually. And, you know, and it helped him on the road to becoming a conservative. Later, I was able to actually tell that story to Phyllis Schlafly, but sadly, that kind of thing, you know, is maybe going to be a thing of the past, then, where on the college campuses, people are only going to hear the one side and not even have access to hearing the other side.
Well, a lot of that is deliberate also, because it's basically the political party. The Democrats, they rely upon universities constantly safeguarding them from any challenges from the Republicans. Now, we see from the recent elections that it doesn't work. I mean, eventually, Republicans do get into public office, but the Democrats are at least dependent on the universities being, that's their first layer of protection from people challenging their authority, and particularly their control over the massive amounts of money that are allocated to the areas of education and health and social services. So essentially, what they look to the college campuses as a place to say, okay, you need to nip it in the bud before any kind of dissent reaches the point where it'll actually threaten our financial and our political position. And so it used to be that they could allow Phyllis Schlafly to come and give a speech, but now I think the Democrats are so sensitive to any challenges to their authority, I think that they have committed themselves to so many viewpoints that are quite strained and contrived, and they're vulnerable. Like, for instance, a lot of their positions on transgenderism are just completely insane. And so if you were to allow someone to come to campus and to present anything that is remotely logical and that is a counterpoint, I mean, that really threatens their power, because a lot of those students in the audience are going to be convinced of the other side. So they can't allow anybody to come in to threaten their position of power. So we're in a state of, it is essentially a totalitarian country within a country that's on the campuses. And so that's what I argue in the book, that a lot of times conservatives have focused on students being snowflakes or being oversensitive, or they have focused on academic freedom. But I think really at the heart of it is racketeering and corruption.
Mm. And the prices of college have gone, you know, through the roof. Explain that, and how does that tie into all this?
Well, I think a lot of it was because of the monopolistic situation where you had the Democrats, you know, one party that was just, because of this alliance between them and academia, both sides had to basically deliver their part of the bargain with no questions asked. The academia had to get the votes and the policy support and the public relations wins for the Democrats without asking whether the Democrats' policies were really working. And the Democrats had to deliver that money to academia without really inspecting or scrutinizing what they were spending the money on. So, as always happens in a situation like that, the academy just spent like drunken sailors, and they hired lots of administrators. They have lots of offices that have nothing to do with instruction. And a lot of this does have to do with these guest speakers or events that come to campus, which I actually think I want less of. I want less of those big events, because that drives up the student fees. And sometimes if you bring, like, let's say, Bill Clinton to your college campus, you can sometimes pay him a fee that's outrageous. I mean, it's like in tens of thousands of dollars. So because of all of these costs, it just gets higher and higher, and the Democrats always, they trumpet education. They know that the public is very susceptible to being persuaded by education or pro-education arguments, and so they were able to just constantly raise the tuitions, and the Democrats guaranteed that federal policy would allow them to cover the balance with student loans and guarantees of student loans. But the problem with those student loans is that they're huge, and they become a monkey on people's backs. It's a huge transfer of wealth from the poor and the middle class of America, who work so hard and save up their money to send their kids to college, and then their kids have this, you know, they have this monthly payment that they have to make good on for the rest of their life, and they can't walk away from it. And for some of them, they're still paying it off at 45, 50, 55. So it's a huge chunk of your life that has been sold, essentially, a huge part of your labor that is now being taken from you by this college, you know, that drew you in based on the promise that you were going to make a better life for yourself. And I don't think they're delivering on that promise.
Yeah, and especially if you end up with just some sort of general degree. I mean, you're absolutely right. Okay, where can people get your book, Wackos, Thugs, and Perverts?
My book is on Amazon. I can guarantee you there's no other book that is called Wackos, Thugs, and Perverts. So that's the one. Also, I'm on Twitter at Baptist for Freedom, and the four there is the number four. So Baptist for Freedom, number four. And I post lots of updates there about a lot of the news that I follow. And I have been able to do the rounds and sort of speak to a lot of interviewers about the book. I hope that those of us who are critical of higher ed are going to be able to make some changes and push the Trump administration to take advantage of the situation he has right now and actually make drastic changes.
Okay. Dr. Robert Oscar Lopez, again, thanks so much for being with us. The name of his book, Wackos, Thugs, and Perverts, Clintonian Decadence in Academia. All the best,
Thank
Robert.
Thank you so much.
Thank you now. Bye-bye.